Hello, I'm Mario LeBlanc. This is number 0228, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0228. And coming your way on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Niall Nickel, who is a technology expert, talking about the future of YouTube.
When I look at where YouTube has been, where it's going, but where the overall on-demand content delivery is going, I see YouTube as becoming really one of the leaders in the transition from the broadcasting sort of mode that we have today, where people broadcast on a schedule and it's consumed on that schedule, to an on-demand content delivery system. You pull it down when you want to pull it down, as often as you want to pull it down, with no restriction.
Paul J.J. Payak from the Global Language Monitor is back on the show to talk about the top words and phrases of 2013.
Our goal every year is to document what happened in the world according to the English language usage. And when we talk about English language, we're not just talking about Canada and the US and UK and Australia. We're talking about 1.83 billion people that use English as in some factor as a first, second, or business language right now.
Stuart Nolman is in with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nolman. And as the new year begins, Book Banter looks back at my favorite books of 2013. So let's turn back the page one more time on the Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you that this was show number 0228, is my best friend on the planet, Mario LeBlanc. I thank you very much, Mario, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Okay, so the holidays are just about over, so let's share a depressing story of Christmas commercialization, shall we? Who says China is not westernized? There is no greater icon of Western consumerism than a manic, shopping-obsessed woman, and the woman in this story has set a new precedent for taking shopping to the extreme. She shopped until her boyfriend killed himself. Yes, I kid you not. I mean, that brings new meaning to the term, shop until you drop. But okay, there were probably some underlying issues involved here. But most men can appreciate the feeling of frustration when a woman just will not stop going from store to store to store, uttering empty promises of, this is the last one. Now this man, 38-year-old Tiao Xiao, was escorting his girlfriend around a shopping mall in Jiangsu Province, East China. After 5 hours, Tiao finally had enough and demanded to go home. Eyewitnesses say he could be heard saying that they already had more bags than they could carry, but she insisted on going into one more shop where there was a special offer on shoes. An eyewitness said he told her she already had enough shoes, more shoes than she could wear in a lifetime, and it was pointless buying any more. She started shouting at him, accusing him of being a skinflint and of spoiling Christmas. It was a really heated argument. The shouting match ended when the man threw the bags on the floor and jumped over the balcony, smashing into Christmas decorations on his way down before hitting the floor 7 stories below, causing shocked shoppers to flee in panic. If that is not a metaphor for commercialization of Christmas, nothing is. It is not known whether the woman eventually got, by the way, that last pair of shoes. Anyway, Larry Poulos was stopped on an Arlington, Texas street in September, bleeding from a head wound and complaining that he had just been robbed by 2 men. A friend of Poulos later corroborated that, but police also learned that the money Poulos had been carrying was the proceeds of his having robbed a credit union earlier that evening. He was treated for his wounds and then arrested. That's what you call karma. Elsewhere, a Georgia woman said it would have been a better idea to have the toilet seat that she was glued to removed by a doctor rather than the paramedics who used WD-40. Ileana Delacour said she was recovering from several skin tears after a rescue crew spent several minutes trying to free her from a restroom at the Home Depot where unknown pranksters spread glue on the toilet seat. "I couldn't understand why they wouldn't just take me to an emergency room and have a doctor remove it," Ileana said. She said she was stuck for about an hour during the incident late November at a Home Depot in Banks County. She was left not only embarrassed but also still in pain. The woman's sister agreed that the ambulance crew should have opted for the safe route and taken Ileana to the emergency room, seat and all. "She wasn't in her right state of mind to okay an experiment on her," her sister said. "It worked out, but I don't think she should have been there." I don't know about that. I mean, taken care of somewhat discreetly in the washroom by paramedics, or wheeled into the bright fluorescent lights of a busy ER with a toilet seat stuck to your behind. What would you prefer? Either way, you know you're going to be the butt of all jokes. Yeah. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, an Illinois woman is accused of putting rat poison in her ex-boyfriend's coffee filters and urinating in his mouthwash after he evicted her from his home. Amanda Pollard, age 28, was evicted by Joshua Brewster, and when she returned days later to gather some of her belongings, she threatened to burn the house down with him in it. Brewster asked a friend to check if Pollard was still inside the home, and when he arrived, he said he found Pollard cutting the electric cord of a blanket. The friend called the police after he discovered the rat poison. Pollard, who told police she was hurt and angry, faces charges that include felony tampering with food and criminal damage to property. Well, you know, given the brief facts of this story, it might be somewhat clear as to why he was evicting her. I mean, she's just plain fatal attraction crazy. Yes. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Like so many online entities, YouTube has changed the world. The faceless now have an outlet to have their voice heard. Millions of videos are posted on YouTube daily. So what exactly is the future of YouTube? On the line with us right now is technology expert Niall Nickel. He joins us on the line from Florida. Hi, Niall.
Well, good. I should say good morning.
Nice to have you on the program with us. So let me just get to the question right off the bat. What exactly is the future of YouTube?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I'm going to give you what I believe the future is. When I look at where YouTube has been, where it's going, but where the overall on-demand content delivery is going, I see YouTube as becoming really one of the leaders in the transition from the broadcasting mode that we have today, where people broadcast on a schedule and it's consumed on that schedule, to an on-demand content delivery system. You pull it down when you want to pull it down, as often as you want to pull it down, with no restrictions. And you see, with more and more changes that YouTube is making, them moving more and more that direction.
Well, let's talk about YouTube itself then. How has YouTube changed from its inception to now?
Well, YouTube, which isn't that long ago, about 8 years ago when it started, people would make funny, silly videos that they wanted to share with a few friends, and they'd post that video up, and a few friends would see it and laugh, and they'd comment, and sort of like Facebook, if you will, except with video in it. Oh wait, Facebook has that now too, but in any case, that's how it started. And what it has become is something totally different. I mean, you know, there are singers being discovered there, there are actors and actresses being discovered there. There's all sorts of new athletes and talents being discovered there. There are people that are posting their opinions there now, and they're starting to generate massive followers. People that are coming back and saying, "Hey, I like what you're doing, give me more," and subscribing to their channel. So it started out just as sharing some videos. What it's become is really a micro-niche broadcasting industry except it's on demand, not on schedule.
Okay, so was YouTube the first or the best? And the reason why I ask that is because they do have competition like everything else, but their competition is so dwarfed.
Well, their competition's so dwarfed, and, you know, YouTube has something that I think most people know, but sometimes we tend to forget, and that is they're a Google company. So YouTube is really Google. YouTube is also the second biggest search engine. So when people are going to search for videos or search for content, YouTube's the second place they're going. Well, when that ties in with Google, what happens is they're starting to generate massive ad revenue, massive interest, and they're starting to really dwarf all of those competitors. And yes, there are literally hundreds of competitors. You know, YouTube wasn't the first. A lot of people would argue that it's not the best. A lot of people don't use it. They use some of the alternatives. But it's certainly one of the bigger names, and it's certainly getting more traction than most of the others.
Is it changing the world as far as other companies are concerned? And I'm thinking right now primarily broadcast television, for instance. Is it changing the way these companies think and work?
It's changing it in a major way. In fact, if there's any real thing that's happening right now, what you just talked about, pitting broadcast against the online YouTube, if you will, is the biggest thing that's happening. But what YouTube's doing is they are now starting to generate original content. They're broadcasting their own created, if you will, television shows, except they're YouTube shows. So they're now directly competing with broadcasters. But there's also this tenuous relationship because broadcasters are also including YouTube in a lot of their broadcasts. You know, you see most of the late-night entertainment talk shows now, and it's not uncommon to see one, two, three YouTube clips in an evening show.
Hmm. Well, let's look at it from a business point of view. The question that comes up is a question that has come up literally since the inception of the web. Back in the day, companies would ask the question, why do I need a website? And people would ask the question of companies, why don't you have a website? Let's ask that same question about YouTube. Is this something companies should be looking at? And if so, why?
Absolutely, positively. You know, first off, if I go back and I say that YouTube is the second biggest search engine out there, if you have a very simple video that could be a narrated slide video, three slides, all of a sudden it gets you massive visibility on the internet. It gets you found. And it's amazing how well it gets you found. So by the time you marry it with what you may do on some of the other social media platforms or what you do on your website, all of a sudden you start to get tremendous visibility because of being on YouTube. For example, I do a lot of LinkedIn work. And in the LinkedIn work, one of the things that I recommend is when you go to do company pages, you always, 100% of the time, have your company video embedded in your LinkedIn profile. Why? Because you get the double boost between LinkedIn recognizing you and promoting you and between YouTube recognizing you and promoting you.
Well, we're talking about all the positives of YouTube, and every entity has a plus and a minus. What do you think are the bad side of YouTube, or conversely, the things that YouTube doesn't do well?
One of the biggest challenges, not only YouTube, but really all the online suppliers or moderators have had now, if you will, and certainly they fall into that category, is what to do with the videos that don't meet community standards for whatever reason. It might be nudity. It might be language. It might be parental controls or lack thereof. You know I have some young children now. They love going on YouTube and watching cat or turtle videos or whatever. The problem is you don't know exactly what they're going to see. And YouTube really doesn't do a super job of policing that. They rely on the users to help them police it. But that doesn't mean that a lot of undesirable or at least content that you don't want to have your children exposed to, for example, doesn't get viewed. We so just, it's a real challenge that quite honestly they don't have a good answer for yet.
Do you see YouTube leaving the? I mean, now we have tablets besides the desktop. We have mobile phones. People are now looking at YouTube on their giant screen TVs. Do you find that this is a situation where, at least for a younger generation, not us old guys, but that they won't see the difference between what's on television, what's on YouTube, what's on their cellular phone?
It's already happened. I mean, the people that are looking for content, they really aren't concerned about where the content is coming from. And for that matter, they're not concerned about where they're consuming it. As a matter of fact, they think that you should be able to consume it on any device you want, wherever you want, whenever you want. So it sort of fits the new model of really what YouTube's trying to do.
We're starting to see some channels on YouTube that you actually have to pay for. Do you see that something, because you just touched on the fact that people want to see things where they want, how they want, whenever. And the other thing is, a lot of people do not want to do anything that costs money. Newspapers are finding it difficult to have a paywall, yet other companies are trying it, including YouTube.
No, it's absolutely, it's probably one of the fastest growing areas. The thing that happens with any new technology, and YouTube would certainly fall into this category, is what comes out initially is not the finest and most polished you'd like to see. Now, there are times that you could care less about how finely polished it is. As a matter of fact, the fact that it's rough and raw and all of that sometimes is what creates the entertainment factor. But as you get into regular viewing, people, for the most part, want to step it up to the next level. But and then they get that option to go behind a paywall, for example. And YouTube really creates a perfect situation for that, because if somebody doesn't know you, they've got the ability to experience some of your content. You know, maybe if you're doing regular broadcast, here's last year's broadcast. This year's is behind the paywall. They could watch all last year's they want for free. And they get to know you, they get to like you, they get to trust you, and then they open up their wallet to you and say, you know, I want to consume more of this and I'm willing to pay for it. Mm. And so it is one of the fastest growing areas by far of YouTube. As a matter of fact, just in my local market of people I know at least a dozen people right now that are making their total living off of their subscription-based YouTube channel.
Wow. We have just about a minute, and you touched on a little while ago that you use YouTube in connection with LinkedIn. I know you have a website called LinkedInFocus.com. What will people find when they go there?
Hopefully they'll find a lot of good content that just tells them, if they're not familiar with LinkedIn. I do a lot of social media work, but I focus on LinkedIn, hence the name of the site, LinkedIn Focus. But it lets them know how they could use LinkedIn to get the results that they're really after, whether that's more customers, whether it's a job, whether it's some new business opportunities, whatever it may be. And we share a lot of good information up there about that.
Excellent. And as I mentioned, people can go to the website, which is LinkedInFocus.com. Niall, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Hey, wonderful interview today, and I thank you for the time.
Technology expert Niall Nickel. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0228, and you'll find links to Niall's site.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Choosy mothers choose the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. If your mother didn't choose it for you, well, I guess she just doesn't love you.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about the words and phrases of 2013. Plus, Stuart Nolman is along with another edition of Book Banter. And of course, there is indeed an idiot of the day. And lots more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, we have two cases of people who are extremely slick talkers, one good, one bad. Here's the first one. Number one, a young woman accosted by a robber on Washington, D.C.'s Capitol Hill in October told a man that she was a low-paid intern, but an intern with the National Security Agency, and that within minutes of robbing her, the man would be tracked down by ubiquitous NSA is surveillance. She said later that the man just looked at me and ran away empty-handed. And slick talker number two, a 29-year-old cafeteria worker at Sullivan East High School in Blountville, Tennessee, swore to police on the scene in October that she was not the one who took money from co-workers' purses, and she voluntarily stripped to near nakedness to demonstrate her innocence. "See, I don't have it," she said. Moments later, an officer found the missing $27 stuffed in the woman's shoe. Okay, the second one may be not so slick because, let's face it, she didn't get away with it. First one, full marks. Kudos to her. Meanwhile, elsewhere, here's a story that is very similar to one we had about 3 months ago on the program. I'm hoping this kind of thing is not turning into some kind of weird epidemic of stupidity. Police in Redding, California say a man accused of stealing a truck told officers he took the vehicle because he needed a ride to court for another car theft case. Police said John Westberg, age 69, called police when he heard his 1989 Ford Ranger start up and saw it being driven away from his home by the apparent thief. Officers pulled the truck over about 20 minutes later and arrested Michael Heller, age 21. According to Redding police, Heller admitted to officers that he stole Westberg's truck because he needed a ride to court for an unrelated stolen vehicle case. Heller was arrested for vehicle theft and possession of a stolen vehicle and was booked at the Shasta County Jail. Perhaps they should just keep him behind bars until future court appearances. Either that or just give the guy some taxi chits. I don't know. Anyway, apparently, the holiday season brings the penis out in some people. In Wisconsin, a postal worker said he simply wanted to cheer up a woman on his rounds who seemed stressed out, so he decided to deliver her mail naked. He even told her he was going to do it. As a prank, I suppose. But whether she took him seriously or not, there was no doubting his sincerity when he showed up at her office wearing only a smile and his mail bag. And by mail bag, I mean the bag he uses to carry letters. Get your mind out of the gutter. The 52-year-old was arrested for lewd and lascivious behavior several days later. Nor rain, nor sleet, nor hail, nor dark of night shall keep a letter carrier from his appointed rounds. Being under arrest? Well, that's a different story. Anyway, Stacy Slabach, age 33, was arrested in Land O'Lakes, Florida, for driving with a suspended license, because they're always caught driving with a suspended license, it seems to be, which resulted in police impounding her car. Now, later, she returned with her mother to get her mother's medications, which were in the car that she had left behind. Now, while her mother waited, Slabach went into the restroom. Police found her passed out in the bathroom along with a used syringe, a crack pipe, crack cocaine, and marijuana. According to deputies, Slabak had gone into the restroom to inject cocaine. She was arrested and charged with possession of drugs and drug paraphernalia. You know, I don't think I'm going too far out on a limb here when I say that if you can't wait till you're out of a police station washroom to shoot up, you might have a drug problem. Yeah. And time for one more story in this section of Stuff File News before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. You want to hear a cliche come to life? Okay, here you go. Four villagers in northeast Kenya, angry that cheetahs were killing their goats, lay in wait one night in November and then chase down and capture the cheetahs. Now, cheetahs are regarded as the fastest mammals on earth, but they lack endurance. Kenyans, as everybody knows, are marathon prodigies. Indeed, the cheetahs were captured only when they ran out of gas after about 4 miles of pursuit by the Kenyans and were handed over alive, but exhausted, to the Kenyan Wildlife Service. Yeah. You know, personally, I think Kenyans should be dispatched to major cities to catch pickpockets and muggers. Nobody is going to outrun these guys. Nobody. Let's get to our next guest, shall we? Another year has come and gone, and with it, another year filled with top words and phrases, which is the reason we always invite Paul J.J. Payak back on the show. He's from the Global Language Monitor, and he spends his time tracking trends in the English language. He's on the line with us right now, once again, via Skype-to-Skype communications from Austin, Texas. Hi, Paul.
Hey, it's great to be with you again. This has got to be the 8th, 9th, or 10th time we've done this. It's a long time, Peter.
Quite a few years we've been doing this, but I mean, the English language is a fascinating thing, and you have a fascinating job just monitoring this. It's, I understand, the 14th annual survey that you're doing this year?
Yes, the 14th, and so now we have a nice history. And, you know, our goal every year is to document the world, what happened in the world according to the English language usage. And when we talk about English language, we're not just talking about the Canada and the US and UK and Australia. We're talking about 1.83 billion people that use English as in some factor as a first, second, or business language right now.
Now, before we get to the list, how do you quantify what are the most used words and phrases? What algorithm do you use?
All year long, we track these things. This is a study that's been going on for 14 years. And how we support ourselves is we talk to different companies. They want to know, you know, with the Olympics, how am I doing? How's my brand working? How's my college doing, et cetera? And we go out and study for them exactly what's happening in a language point of view. And it's amazing. It's like big data is really getting big data is getting well known as a way to find out information about what's going on. And we've been doing it through the language. Okay. And so it becomes, first of all, a word has to have at least 25,000 mentions globally or it doesn't count. We talk about the requisite breadth and depth. The breadth is it has to be spoken around the world in every place that English is spoken. In depth is it just can't be like an internet phrase. It can't be on the radio. It can't be a group of scientists or, you know, one particular nation. It has to be found globally and in different media such as television, newspapers, books, internet, etc.
Now, I understand, even though you say it can't be just internet, I understand this year's top word isn't even really a word, is it?
Oh, right. Well, you know, nowadays, there's all sorts of words, right? We have a list of a couple hundred emoticons that are actually words. They say things on a written form. And this year it was 404. Now 404 is a universal computer word for fail, okay? And 404 and fail were actually two of the top words. And it's because so many things in the systems that have been set up since World War II, basically when the modern era started, are failing right now, okay? Is the EU working? Is, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It's like this Obamacare, that's this big thing in the United States, but just systems in general are seeing a lot of failure. And then the word fail. And so when we see that, it's like you find out that one word shows up, and we have tons of databases that we look at. okay? But when you look at the word 404, you'll find hundreds of millions of it. I mean, it's not something that just pops up. It, I mean, people use it as a term for just failure in general, 404 and the word fail.
Okay, so looking at some of the things there at the top of the list, for instance, you have 404, fail, hashtag, Pontifex. I'm just wondering how much is the internet literally driving the English language? In other words, some of the things that are used only on the internet seem to be coming into our daily speech because of the internet.
Oh, yeah. There's no question that the internet is one of the great propagators of the English language right now. And English in particular, because English has become the global language. People, you know, in China, there's a dozen or two dozen prominent languages, and people from one end of China to the other don't speak in the same language. Guess what they use? English, you know? And so there's all this idea about, you know, is it a type of cultural invasion having English? And maybe at one time it was, but now the reality is English is, you know, you run your computers by English. 99% of scientific papers are written in English. I mean, you just look at it. And so you may localize a computer program, but in its guts, it's all English.
Okay, I mentioned the first four already. So let me just quickly mention the next batch. So
okay, well, we have things like surveillance and drones and deficit, emancipate and sequestration. Now, people see these as negative, and they can. But you can also see like emancipation as a positive. And emancipate is, you know, there are just as many people in bondage nowadays than there were in ancient times. Right. And it's things like sexual slavery and things of that nature. And there's millions of people in these situations. So emancipation is a good word. In terms of deficit, 10 of the top 12 countries economically, like 10 of the top 12, all have significant deficits. Right. You know, the only two that don't, China and Germany.
Yeah, the banks of the world, when you think about it. So I just want to make sure we get the numbering in. So the optic was 5, surveillance was 6, drones 7, deficit 8, sequestration 9, and emancipate 10. I'm almost glad to see, looking down the list, I wasn't going to go past the top 10, because we heard so much all through the year about twerking. It is on the list, but it only made number 13. I feel good about that.
Right, because, you know, it's interesting. It's like people will use it as, well, it's the number one word of the year. And it's like, not if you use an English language. Not if you really look at all the words that are actually used. And so if you want a quick hit, you know, want a quick headline, twerking is fine. You know, we made it actually number one for television. And for television, we used to mean the small screen. Now we mean any mobile or static device, anything that you can get a video on. So it's your phone, it's your handheld, it's your TV, it's your computer, whatever. And so when we looked at the numbers there, well, they're not as highfalutin as other forms of media. And so twerking became our number one television word, which we feel is appropriate. And we're able to do that because we have so many different words classified in different areas.
Now, okay, I know you have the world rankings of these words, and that's the 10 that we got. And I kind of understand that, but we have just a few more minutes, and I wanted to get to the world ranking of phrases. And I was kind of surprised at what was in the top 10, only because it seemed to be, for lack of a better term, very U.S.-centric to be global. Toxic politics. I mean, that was happening everywhere. Federal shutdown. That was clearly an American situation.
But it was really big in the U.S.
Global warming, understand. Federal deficit, again. Well, there was a lot of problems with federal deficits when it comes to various countries.
Federal deficit includes those 12 nations that we just talked about, the top economies that were all running deficits. So it's more than just the U.S. Fred Lightly was for a television show, and that was really big for a short period of time.
Tread Lightly from Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad.
Number 6 is Boston Strong. Number 7 is Marathon Bombing. So the two are kind of connected.
Right.
Number 8, chemical weapons. Quite understandable. Number 9, all-time high. What is...
Right, that's the American Stock Exchange, but it's also the Nikkei and in Japan. Right. It's like all sorts of exchanges are ranking or rated all-time highs now. And so a lot of people are very happy about that, but there's a group of people in the world that see that as an implicit danger sign.
And speaking...
All-time highs never last that long.
And speaking of implicit dangers, speaking of implicit dangers, number 10, rogue nukes.
Right. And rogue nukes, is that's been a big story for 15, 20 years now. And we don't see that going away. We just see the players change, right? And so that's a thing around the world. There, you know, Saudi Arabia is talking about they need a nuclear arsenal if Iran has one. And it's really frightening when you think about it.
And we can't forget North Korea.
North Korea. And that, yeah, and then the established powers that have this, one of the scariest threats is Pakistan and India.
Right.
Right.
It's a fascinating study that you get to do each and every year. But as you say, it's an ongoing thing. For people who want to know more information about what you do, which is the Global Language Monitor, they can go to the website, which is languagemonitor.com. And when they go to the website, what exactly will they find?
They will find so many things they won't believe. We've been working on this for a long time. So it's 400 or 500 pages thick now. And so you can find things about sports, the Olympics, branding, politics globally, and then you just see we have like things from the movies and things of that nature and different specifications. So you could really people tell us they get lost in a website, and that's good because it's all about the love of language. And we do this, you know, we have a business goes along with it, but this is what we actually love doing because this is the stuff that really is telling us what's happening on the planet in the English speaking world from year to year for the last 14 years.
Paul, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program to talk. Again, people can check out the website, languagemonitor.com. Thank you very much for being on the program with us once again.
Great talking to you.
Paul J.J. Payak from Global Language Monitor. Again, you can visit their website at www.languagemonitor.com. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0228, and you'll find the links to Paul's site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. I'd like to tell you about a canal in my hometown of Cadillac, Michigan. It was once featured on Ripley's Believe It or Not. The canal connects two lakes, and when the temperature falls to freezing, it covers over with ice before the lakes do. However, it thaws out when the lakes freeze over, and it stays unfrozen all winter. Snowmobilers would sometimes get hurt by driving into the open canal, so to prevent injuries, each winter volunteers would build a temporary fence on the ice where the lakes opened to the canal. They did this for many years. Then something really strange happened, but it's not something you'd hear about on the Ripley TV show. The volunteers stopped building the fence, even though it was still needed for safety. Why? Because they were told that they could be sued if it blew away and a snowmobiler got hurt. Let's be fair, this is just one example of how the constant threat of being sued in America puts public safety at risk. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And as we say goodbye to 2013 and hello to 2014, Stuart Nauman is here with Book Banter. Hello, Stu.
Hello, Peter. Hello, 2014. How are you?
Yes, it's a baby. It doesn't speak yet. You know, it's in its infancy right now.
I was wondering why it hasn't said anything yet.
Yes, yes, yes.
We'll see what happens in about a year's time.
Yep. I thought, since you do Book Banter and you have your column on a regular basis each week, and that you get to read a lot of books each and every week, each and every day. I know you. I don't know how the floors of your apartment support your bookshelves. But I'm curious to know, because, you know, I used to be a film reviewer as well, and there are films that you like because they are good films, but there are films that you like because you like them personally.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
yeah,
I always, at the end of each year, being of a new year, I always like to list my favorite books of the year. Now, this doesn't necessarily have to be the best books of the year. Let's be straightforward about that.
Right.
Okay. Some other critics may have not liked these books or panned them, but I thought they were pretty good. So that's why I always say these are my favorite books of the year, not the best books of the year. I mean, there are some that will, you know, there are some that will have that distinction. But these are my personal favorites that really stood out for me over this past year of reading. And I read about over 50 books a year.
Right.
That's a lot of books. So I narrowed it down to 5 books, and they're in no particular order except for the last one, which will be my book of the year.
Okay.
All right. So we'll start off with a book called Top of the Morning by Brian Stelter, who's a media critic for New York Times, now the host of CNN's Reliable Sources. And he gives a great inside look at the morning show wars, between Today and Good Morning America in particular.
Right.
And if you realize that TV business is cutthroat, you'll see it's even more cutthroat when you're in the morning show business, especially for the war for ratings between those two shows. And if there's a tragic hero that emerges from this book, it's Ann Curry, who was basically she was thrown
under the bus, basically, is what you're saying.
Yeah, by Matt Lauer, who I thought was like Brian Gumbel Redux, actually. And when you think about it, if you know your Today Show history, the situation with Ann Curry was actually almost like what happened with Devin Orville and Katie Couric.
But to be honest, people have poked a lot of fingers toward Matt Lauer. Yeah. And I'm not saying he's an innocent in all of this, but I'm just wondering, did he really throw her under the bus or just not simply point out the bus was coming?
I think it wasn't just Matt Lauer. I think it was like the entire production, the cabal. Of the Today Show.
If that is the case, let me state the case for Matt here. If that is the case, then why is Matt getting all the grief? And conversely, if that is the case, if the cabal, as you say, felt that maybe Ann should be going, maybe Ann should be going.
Well, you know what? I think maybe that was the case, but also I think Ann hasn't been the worst for wear within NBC because now she's doing what she likes doing, which was, is doing news reports from different parts of the world.
It's just quite possible that being the morning co-host of the Today Show wasn't a good fit for her, period.
No, but it was almost like when you read the book, you feel that Ann Curry was doomed from the moment she was named to succeed Meredith Vieira.
Well, maybe the mistake was naming her.
Maybe, but if there was one thing that benefited from this little inside war with the Today Show were the people of Good Morning America, who for the first time in their history beat the Today Show as the number one morning show during that period.
Okay, I'm going to debate that one too. Not to sound cold and callous, but it's a lot of things coming together at the same time. What was going on at the Today Show? Let's be honest. At ABC, cancer played a role.
Yeah, with Robin Roberts, definitely. Yes. So, and that's chronicled in the book as well. So it's a really interesting backstage drama when you read this book. And unfortunately, this book was panned by Entertainment Weekly as one of the worst books of the year. Maybe they expect a little bit more from Brian Stelter, because he was the New York Times media reporter who's supposed to know all the inside track. Maybe they expect a little bit more. But I thought it was a pretty interesting book with all the intrigues and the backstabbing and the little personal dramas that go on in morning television. So if you like behind-the-scenes TV, read Top of the Morning.
Okay. So we've on next.
Next, baseball. Always like baseball books. And this one really stood out for me, called Victory Season by Robert Weintraub. This chronicled the 1946 baseball season, the first post-war baseball season. And what was significant about it was during that, which culminated with the World Series between the Boston Red Sox and the St. Louis Cardinals, it was the last time for 20 years that these two teams, which were dominant in the 30s and 40s, lost its dominance in pro baseball and gave way to the New York teams. And also, ironically, it was the last time that Stan Musial and Ted Williams would appear in a World Series. But it's a really well-chronicled, well-researched book. Robert Weintraub did an excellent book about the 1923 series, but the first season in Yankee Stadium, called The House That Ruth Built. Some great little tidbits about the season. One in particular, because there were so many rationing was still going on in 1946, is that during the World Series, the St. Louis Cardinals organization literally had to scramble for meat, for steaks, to feed those hungry baseball reporters during when they were playing the series in St. Louis.
Trust me, I've worked in the press box of a Major League Baseball team. You don't feed the press. Oh, you have angry wolves.
Oh, yeah. They had to get credit for the Cardinals organization back then to scrounge up those much-needed steaks. But a really fascinating book about a baseball book about a single season, especially one where two teams and two legends, you know, are all, I mean, even though they had a lot of good years ahead of them, you know, we're basically had their World Series swan songs in that one year, 1946.
And the book is called?
The Victory Season is by Robert Weintraub.
Okay, we have three more books to get to, and to get to them very quickly. Number three.
Astronaut Wives Club by Lily Koppel. If you love the right stuff, you'll love this book. But it just shows how the wives of the astronauts, not just the Mercury astronauts, but the Apollo and Gemini astronauts, were the unsung heroes of the space race of the 60s and 70s. And they weren't just trophy wives. They were also wives who were very smart, very intelligent, who supported their astronaut husbands, but also went beyond that and decided to go for their own careers as well. Really an inside story that hasn't been told, that was a little bit more neglected in the right stuff, but this really shows that the astronaut wives were just as much heroes as their space-exploring husbands.
And the title is?
The Astronaut Wives Club by Lily Koppel.
And number two?
Still Fooling Him by Billy Crystal, his memoir about what it's like to hit 65. But also about his wonderful career in show business, which, you know, started from humble beginnings, and because of a dead-on impersonation of Muhammad Ali, built his whole career from there to soap, to Saturday Night Live, to movies, to Broadway, and basically, you know, giving a nice, humorous, very heartfelt look at what it's like to be being a senior citizen for the first time.
Title again is?
Still Fooling Him by Billy Crystal.
And Stuart Nolman's number one book of 2013 is?
It's called Detroit, An American Autopsy by Charlie LaDuff. If you thought, you know, major American cities or Canadian cities had big problems in 2013, read this book about Detroit. Charlie LaDuff was a New York Times reporter, went back to his hometown in Detroit, and saw a city that was basically falling apart. And this is the birthplace of the auto industry. And he gives like a lot of great stories about wow and why Detroit fell apart, mainly because it was reliant on one industry that was, you know, lost competition to the Japanese, but just also how a city administration, how it should not be run, how corruption was so rampant, it led to the deterioration of Detroit. Very fascinating, very somber book, but it just hits you right between the eyes that if you're not too careful, your city could fall apart just like Detroit did.
Does that book, by the way, have any pictures in it?
Yeah, there are some pictures. There are some pictures that shows the decay and waste of Detroit.
Because there are some great sites online that have some pictures of Detroit, and it's just really heartbreaking to see some of the, you know, interiors of the abandoned buildings that were once literally opulent palaces like hotels and such, and theaters that are just falling in constant decay. One of the things I also find interesting about the city of Detroit, you know, the population is getting smaller and smaller, but not only are the living moving, the dead are moving. People are disinterring their loved ones and taking them with them when they go, which is an ironically macabre kind of thing. The living and the dead are leaving Detroit.
It's very ironic. And this is a trend that went on for about 50, 60 years.
Yeah.
And it's not getting any better. So there's some signs of hope. But
so the book is?
Detroit, An American Autopsy by Charlie Duff. Gotta read it. Terrific book. That's my book of the year.
That's your book of the year. And how can people find you and read more about some of the things we were talking about just now?
Well, you can read me in the Montreal Times in print every Saturday or online at www.mtltimes.ca.
Thank you very much, Stuart.
You're welcome, Peter. Speak to you later.
Stuart Nolman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about out of racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. We do indeed have an Idiot of the Day coming your way in just a matter of moments, but first, a few Stuff File news stories to get to, starting with a Florida man who tried to trade a live alligator for beer at a convenience store, said he didn't know that trapping the gator was illegal. Police say Fernando Aguilera, age 64, brought the 4-foot alligator in a cardboard box to the Santa Ana Market in Miami's Alapata neighborhood back on December 10th and asked the clerk, Javier Herrera, to accept the reptile in exchange for a 12-pack of beer. Herrera told Aguilera to leave, and the man attempted to make the same trade with a customer. Aguilera said he found the alligator shortly before the incident and didn't know it was illegal to trap the animal. "I just picked it up here," Aguilera said. "I'd seen it here in the grass and I tied it up." He said he wasn't going to accept just any beer in exchange for the gator. "I want a Corona because if he brings me a Natural Light or something like that, I don't want it. I want a Corona because the alligator is so beautiful," he said. Okay. The Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission cited Aguilera for 3 charges related to the illegal capture of the alligator. He faces as much as 6 months in jail or a $500 fine if convicted. The FWC said the alligator was released into the wild. Okay, not to split hairs here, but if he can't afford the money for a case of beer to the point where he's willing to capture and trade an alligator for it, what makes you think he's got $500 for a fine? Just saying. Anyway, Christine Riviera, a 23-year-old who is an administrative assistant in the Washington, D.C. area, thought going for a run would make her feel better after a rough day at work. But after running 5 miles, she suddenly found herself on the ground and then awakening to the voice of a paramedic explaining that he had to cut her shirt away because it had deer blood all over it. She had been hit by a flying buck. The male deer had been flung into the air by an SUV driven by a 71-year-old woman. The buck died. Riviera, who is only 5 foot tall and humorously is known as the Hulk, was treated and released, as was the driver. Well, this did happen in the D.C. area, right? A lot of people in Washington fling around big bucks that aren't theirs. Just saying. Carrie Lindgren, age 36, of Tarpon Springs, Florida, tried to feed a wild duck a piece of candy and was outraged when it wouldn't take the unhealthy treat. A witness says she stalked the duck with her car and, when she got the chance, drove across a lawn at a high rate of speed and ran it over, killing it. Lindgren has been jailed on $5,000 bond and charged with felony-level animal cruelty. Okay, you know, the duck may be dead, but clearly Carrie is the one who is a quack. I almost wanted to make her an idiot of the day, but I didn't. However, this next story is the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff I present, the idiot of the day.
And this week, it's a twofer because while they're individual, they are both so similar. First, a 23-year-old woman was arrested in Crestview, Florida in November for shoplifting a toy from an adult store before inquiring about a job there. She had professed her innocence until shown the surveillance video when she said, according to the police report, "Oh my God, look what I am doing. I'm going to cry." And second, Lawrence Briggs, age 18, was arrested in Marshalltown, Iowa in November after he walked out of a Sports Page store with $153 worth of merchandise he did not pay for. Moments earlier, he had filled out an application to work at Sports Page, and when surveillance cameras exposed him, managers called him in for an interview. I'm doing air quotes here, an interview, and police made the arrest. Now, seriously, why would someone shoplift at a place that they are trying to get employment at? I mean, if you were going to get a job there, and you had to have high hopes for that, right? You were probably going to get an employee discount anyway. Well, there's one reason, and one reason only, why these two clowns would do this. Because they're idiots!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0228. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number. And once again, that's 0228. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs. mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it for this week's show. See you next time. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. A tape of the preceding program will be sent to the Radio Hall of Fame, where it will be placed under the statue of Marconi, which is kind of wobbly.